Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the show. Don Johnson sitting in for Cy Kellett today. He'll be back next week, the good Lord willing. This hour, we are taking questions on life issues. It's pro-life open forum. That means we can talk about abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, embryonic stem cell research, in vitro fertilization, anything in those general fields. And we have as our special guest, Dr. George Delgado. He's the medical director of Culture of Life Family Health Services, and he's also the medical director at Abortion Pill Reversal. You can find out more about that at abortionpillreversal.com. He practices family medical care that is faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church, NFP medical consultant, and he's trained in NAPRO technology, something I may want to ask about later in the show. All of that and more. Dr. Delgado, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Well, good afternoon, Don. It's great to be here.
Dr. Delgado, we'll open up the phone lines here, 888-318-7884. But before we go to the phones, I just wanted to ask you, I saw a very interesting story about a woman with Down syndrome, and in fact, I think she had autism as well, who addressed the United Nations lately. Did you see that?
I did, yes. A very brave 21-year-old woman named Charlotte Fien, who has Down syndrome, also known as trisomy 21. She was selected to talk in front of a UN group in Geneva, Switzerland, and she gave a very impassioned speech, and I want to quote some of the things she said. She said, "I'm not suffering. I am not ill. None of my friends who have Down syndrome are suffering either. We live happy lives. We just have an extra chromosome. We are still human beings. Please don't try to kill us all off." So why did she have to make that speech? Well, unfortunately, unborn babies with Down syndrome have targets on them. In Iceland, 100% of the unborn babies who are diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted, 100%. In other countries like ours, it's probably 80 to 90%. And so it's really a true genocide. And it's a genocide based on chromosomes. It's based on disabilities. This is why many people with disabilities and many disability advocate groups are so strong in their opposition to this sort of thing and in opposition to babies being aborted simply because of their disabilities. Now, fortunately, the people there at the UN who often are pro-abortion did give her a standing ovation. So maybe she touched some of their hearts. Maybe people will start to see these poor unborn children who have chromosomal abnormalities or other birth defects as being just as human as all of the rest of us and just as important, and that it's just as important to protect their lives because they actually are the most vulnerable of the vulnerable.
It's really true, and you talk about 100% of the babies in Iceland. I mean, it's a staggering amount, and it truly is a genocide. She actually said during her speech in a pretty powerful line, "If you continue to do this, you are no better than the Nazis." And I know, you know, people sort of like, oh, you can never bring Nazis into the discussion, but it seems valid in this case, doesn't it?
It certainly does, because think about what the Nazis did. They exterminated classes of people simply based on some of their characteristics, whether they were genetic, like the Down syndrome babies. They went after Jews because they were Jews, so they were a certain class based on genes. They also actually, if you read carefully in history, the Nazi genocide began, first of all, with doctors in psychiatric hospitals killing off patients who were very disabled. So it started out actually with killing disabled people. And then from there it went to infanticide, killing babies who were born with defects. Then from there they went on to other adults who had different medical problems. And finally, when all that was accepted, the doctors who worked in those hospitals then were transferred to set up the killing stations in the concentration camps, where then they started to kill the Jews, of course, also killed gypsies, and they went after Catholics and other groups of people who were felt to be somehow genetically inferior, just the same way that these unborn children with Down syndrome are considered genetically inferior and therefore not fit to live.
There is a certain logical progression, isn't there, between killing babies in the womb and infanticide. And again, it's one of those things as a culture, we're like, well, of course, we're never going to get to infanticide. But I know, I mean, people like Princeton ethicist Peter Singer actually advocate for this already. Is it a very real danger in our culture, do you think, Dr. Delgado?
It absolutely is a real danger. The slippery slope is real because we get desensitized to killing other human beings when we start with those who are hidden, who most of us cannot see except through an ultrasound. And so that's exactly the progression that has occurred. And then you have prominent bioethicists like Peter Singer and others saying that, well, we don't have to confine the killing to just the womb, that parents should have sort of a cooling off period, if you will, where sometime during the first year of life, they can still decide that they don't want that baby and they can legally kill it. And then, of course, we see at the other end of life spectrum, the frail elderly and the sickly, who in many parts of the world can legally be euthanized, which is a nice way of saying we're killing them, because we think that their lives are not worth living. So there again, it's a value judgment on someone's life because of their disabilities that come from elderly age or come from illness. And so really, it's no different at all whether you kill the child in the womb or you kill the elderly sick person because you feel that life is not worth living or because your life is worth more than that person's life.
If you're just joining us, this is Catholic Answers Live. It's Pro-Life Open Forum Hour. We have Dr. George Delgado with us. Any question related to abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, embryonic stem cell research, any of those things, 888-318-7884. Dr. Delgado, what would you say would be steps that we can take to fight against this madness, this culture of death that just seems to be getting more and more powerful, it's encroaching? What are some of the major steps we can take, do you think?
Well, I think for all of us who are believers, the first and most important thing is prayer. And, you know, there's a famous saying attributed to St. Ignatius that we should pray as if it all depended on God, but we should work as if it all depended on us. And so prayer, of course, is the most important thing, but the work we have to undertake, really believing that as if it all depended on us, is to first of all live a good witness and celebrate life and support life in your own families, treat everyone with respect. Sacrifice for the unborn, sacrifice for the babies, sacrifice for your frail elderly and your families. Spend the time with them. And then spend time and sacrifice for the unborn and the frail elderly who are not part of your family. So pray and peacefully protest in front of abortion centers. To write your legislators and let them know that you're opposed to abortion and opposed to euthanasia, opposed to physician-assisted suicide, which is just one step away from euthanasia, of course. And don't be afraid to talk about it in the public square, because right now the secular, really anti-Christian, anti-life forces are trying to marginalize all those who are proponents of life. They're trying to make it seem like we're way out of the mainstream. But in reality, most people in this country actually are pro-life. Most people do support life. But the liberal elite and the liberal media and the society's cultural forces are so much against what we believe and what we hold to be true and what really the natural moral law holds to be true, that they make us feel like we're weak, like we're impotent, like we're marginalized, and that we don't have a place to raise our voices. But I would say that we actually have a much larger role to raise our voices in a polite way, in a charitable way, but nonetheless in an assertive way, so that people know and that we are the proponents of the truth and that there is real truth, that there is real objective truth. And one of those objective truths is that human life is good and that human life is worth protecting. And that if we don't protect every single individual, then we don't protect any of us.
Very well said, and that's why we're here, to stand up for the truth and beauty. 888-318-7884. It's Pro-Life Open Forum Hour. We're talking with Dr. George Delgado. Get your calls in, and after this break, we will go to the phones. 888-31-TRUTH. Don Johnson sitting in for Cy Kellett on Catholic Answers Live today. We'll be right back.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
This is Tim Staples, and I'm really excited to tell you about a special limited-time offer we've got right now on subscriptions to our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. Sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, you can get a collection of 5 exclusive audio presentations added to your order for free. Subscribe today at 818-487-2011 or online at Catholic.com. Sign up for a 1-year subscription and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. Better yet, become a 2-year subscriber and we'll up the ante by dropping the price $20 and by sending you a customized Catholic Answers flash drive containing exclusive talks from a top-notch lineup of speakers, including Chris Check, Carlo Broussard, Trent Horn, Cy Kellett, and my talk, Behold Your Mother. That's a savings of $20 plus 5 brand new audio presentations when you sign up for a 2-year subscription to Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now. This is our best offer of the year, and it's only available for a limited time. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to Catholic.com today.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clear witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online School of Evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Pro-life open forum with Dr. George Delgado. Welcome back to the show. My name is Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy, taking your questions on all sorts of life issues, abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, any of those, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Let's go to Teresa in Salem, Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, Teresa.
Hi.
What's your question for Dr. Delgado?
So I have a sister who's 17 that has Down syndrome, and the doctor put her on birth control to regulate her period. And I actually have 2 questions. So I was wondering if it's wrong, because I did explain to my mom that there has to be other ways to regulate her period, but it seems that the birth control is the easiest, plus as a secondary benefit would be that in case she does become sexually active, she is protected. And then the second question that I have is that my mom, she got her tubes tied, but this was more of a health reason. She had my sister when she was 42, and my mom was very fertile ground for more babies. But she also has a lot of health issues that endanger her life. So talking to the doctor, she got her tubes tied years ago, 17 years ago, and I was wondering if that was wrong of her as well.
Okay, so we're talking about 2 different people, Teresa, right? Your mother had
right.
her own tubes tied, right?
Yes.
And then your sister with Down syndrome. Okay, well, let's take them in the order that you gave it. So your sister with Down syndrome is taking the birth control pills to regulate her periods, which is a legitimate use of birth control pills. So she's not taking it for contraception. She's not taking it to choose to contracept. And, of course, a foreseen side effect of the birth control pills would be that she would have less fertility and even set her up for the possibility of an early chemical abortion if she did conceive. We know that that can happen with birth control pills. However, that's not her intention. And certainly I would assume she's not being sexually active, that she's living a chaste life. So in that case, from an ethical standpoint, using the birth control pills in that manner is not a contraceptive use. So it would be ethically acceptable to use the birth control pills that way. The next question is, from a medical standpoint, is that the best treatment for regulating periods? And I would offer that there probably are better ways that have fewer side effects. The reason is that we know that birth control pills do have significant side effects. Number one, they can cause weight gain. They can cause mood disturbances, which, of course, for someone with Down syndrome who I assume probably has some degree of mental retardation, might be difficult for her to express, but might make her feel badly, and she might not have good insight into why she doesn't feel well. It also can increase the risk of cervical cancer, although it does decrease the risk of ovarian cancer, but cervical cancer is probably more common than ovarian cancer. And there's new evidence that taking birth control pills, particularly before a first-term pregnancy, and I assume she's never been pregnant before giving birth, that this increases the risk of breast cancer down the line. So that, to me, is probably the biggest long-term risk of her being on the birth control pills. So then you would ask, well, what would be an alternative treatment? An alternative treatment would be to give her periodic progesterone, which is bioidentical to what the body makes, the same molecule the body makes, and giving her that periodically in order to help regulate her periods. That often can work very well and does not carry the risks that we've just discussed. So that would be something I would look at. And unfortunately, in modern obstetrics and gynecology, there are two hammers. The one hammer is IVF for people who can't get pregnant, and the other hammer is birth control pills for anybody who doesn't want to get pregnant but may have problems with the cycles or other things. And so those hammers are used all the time instead of trying to look and see if there's a more tailored approach that could be used. So in this case, I think maybe a more nuanced, tailored approach might be considered. And of course, if that doesn't work, then the birth control pill could always be the fallback. So that's how I would approach that. Any questions about that before I go on to the question of your mother?
No.
Okay. So your mother had her tubes tied, and she did that really for contraceptive reasons. She did not want to have any other babies, although her secondary reason was that she felt that she would have some health problems if she got pregnant. Well, the church is pretty clear on the teaching of this, and really it follows the natural moral law, and that is that an action taken cannot be done that leads to an evil in order to achieve a good. In other words, the ends do not justify the means. And so since the natural moral law and Catholic theology teach us that direct sterilization is never acceptable, that it's an affront to God's design of the natural reproductive system, it's also a mutilation of a part of the body that is not diseased. Her fallopian tubes presumably were not diseased. They're healthy fallopian tubes, yet she had them cut and tied. And so that goes against the integrity of the body, and that instead would have been preferred for her to do would be if she had a very good reason to not conceive. Let's say there were serious health complications that would await her if she conceived again, that she could use natural family planning in order to achieve that end. And the natural family planning would be a morally acceptable way to avoid conceiving. And so, of course, your mother may not have known this or had good understanding, because many, many millions of Catholics and other people of goodwill have not understood this concept, and they've actually been misled, unfortunately, by people in and outside of the church. So we can never, of course, say that she is to blame. But from an objective standpoint, when you look at this objectively, that was not the right thing to do from an ethical or moral standpoint, based on the details you've given me. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, that makes sense. Thank you so much.
Okay, yeah. So go easy on your mom, but always present the truth charitably.
Appreciate the call, Teresa. Thank you very much. Let's go to Jim, listening on Sirius 130 EWTN in Georgia. Jim, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Good evening. I am a single Catholic man and about to have my will made, and I want to be protected. I have good fellow Catholic members of my family, and I live away from them. I am professional, but I want to know what you would recommend wording in a will, or I think there's a thing called the medical durable power of attorney. I want any people treating me and hospitals and doctors to understand that while I don't want extraordinary means to continue life, I don't want food and water considered to be something that's just a choice that can be held. So I wondered what, if anything, you could recommend in that area.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, these advanced directives are very, very important for people. but they are double-edged swords. Because if you think about it, it's kind of like if you were to admit a patient to the hospital, let's say as a doctor, and you write what are called admission orders, so all the orders you want carried out at the beginning of the treatment in the hospital. But we very, very rarely write discharge orders, which are the orders that send the patient out of the hospital and then carry out treatments that are to be intended afterwards, because we don't know what's going to happen between the admission and the discharge. So that's why you generally write discharge orders at the end. So the same, you can have the same situation with these advanced directives. If you get too detailed, then what you've written may not apply to you in the future. Things may change in the future, or there may be new treatments that are less burdensome. So lots can change. So for that reason, the most important part of the advanced directive is what you mentioned, the durable power of attorney for healthcare. And that's when you appoint a surrogate decision maker, someone who has the authority to make decisions for your medical care if you are unable to make those decisions. And so it's important to find that person who has the teaching of the church in his heart, who knows Catholic teaching and believes Catholic teaching, and will serve to protect you without burdening you with excessive treatment, because sometimes it can be a fine line. So that's a person you want to know very well. You want to trust that person, and again, trust that that person knows the teachings of the church. Secondly, I would put in the advanced directive, assuming from your voice it doesn't sound like you're old or sickly, is you want to put general principles instead of a lot of specific things. If you are closer to death, then putting a lot of specifics makes a lot of sense because you kind of know where you're headed. But in your case, like I said, you don't want to write the discharge orders before you're even admitted to the hospital. So general principles would be important. So some of the general principles to put would be, I want to be treated in accordance with official Catholic Church teaching on the sanctity of life. And you could even put in there cite different passages from the Catechism of the Church. That would be very appropriate. And you can also put things, general principles that really won't change. Is, for example, you mentioned food and water. You can say that I would like food and water or nutrition and hydration administered to me as long as death is not imminent, and as long as the provision of the nutrition and hydration do not cause a burden to me. So that's a general principle that the church has upheld and that teaches. And then you can explicitly say that I never want to be euthanized, and I never want to be forced into physician-assisted suicide. So things like that, general principles would be good from your standpoint. Does that make sense?
Yes, great. Thank you very much, and God bless you for all the work you do. It's great. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate the call, Jim. Thank you very much. It is Pro-Life Open Forum Hour. We're talking with Dr. George Delgado. Let's try to squeeze one more question in, at least before the bottom of the hour. Let's go to Brendan in Waterboro, Maine, listening on 106.7 The Presence. Brendan, what's your question for Dr. Delgado?
Hi. I was wondering what embryonic stem cell research was, and what's the big worry about it?
Well, that's a great question. Embryonic stem cell research, as the name implies, is the research into how embryonic stem cells can help treat or cure diseases. And that's in contradistinction to adult stem cell research. Adult stem cell research is generally considered to be ethically appropriate, and we have no problems, and there have been many, if not hundreds, of successful cases of human diseases treated with adult stem cells. Embryonic stem cells, however, are cells that are taken from embryos when the embryo is at the blastocyst stage, which is at about day 7 or so of life. And they pluck cells off of the embryo, and in doing so, they necessarily kill the embryo. Okay, so that's the first bad thing about it, is that you kill a human being in order to get cells that hopefully will help treat diseases. And so the second thing is that how you get or create these embryos. Often these embryos are obtained from in vitro fertilization clinics that have so-called spare embryos. These are embryos that were created in the test tube but were not implanted into a mother's womb. They're often frozen for use later. And so sometimes those are thawed, or sometimes even they're never frozen. They're given straight to researchers who then take cells from the embryos and, again, destroying them, and then perform research doing different things They can try to create treatments, or they can establish what are called embryonic cell lines, where they take the cells and try to multiply them on media that grows cells. But whatever they do, there's no doubt that killing human embryos has led to the supply of those cells, and that's why the embryonic stem cell research is not morally acceptable. Now, there are other alternatives where you can obtain cells that are very much like embryonic stem cells through transformation of cells that are taken from adults. So you can take a cell from, let's say, someone's lining of the person's mouth, and you can transform it so that it has a lot of the properties of embryonic stem cells. So this is probably going to make embryonic stem cell research much less important in the future.
All right, great question, Brennan. Thank you for the call. 888-318-7884. It's Pro-Life Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live this hour with Dr. George Delgado. 888-31-TRUTH. Call now and get your question in. We'll be right back.
Catholic Answers Live.
Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is! Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. In a series of short, easy-to-read chapters, Trent covers the whole range of common topics, starting with why we believe in anything at all, and answering all the common objections to the Catholic faith, both doctrinal and moral. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Better yet, it's only $3 a copy when you order in bulk. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Teresa Tomeo.
Every time I go to Mass and see my husband serving on the altar as a deacon, it hits me how, with God, all things are possible. I mean, there is no way that we should be still married, number one, based on all the problems we had. But number two, the fact that I'm in Catholic media and my husband is a deacon is simply a testimony to the power of God and the teachings of the Church that saved our marriage and, more importantly, our souls.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Don Johnson sitting in for Cy Kellett today. You can find out more about me at donjohnsonministries.org. This hour we are taking questions on life issues: euthanasia, assisted suicide, abortion, embryonic stem cell research, in vitro fertilization, any of those things. We are glad to have Dr. George Delgado on the line. Before we go back to the phones, though, let me give you a quick update on our annual Catholic Answers subscription drive. If you don't get Catholic Answers magazine, let me just say, you should. It's a fantastic resource, and you can get a one-year subscription for $10 off the normal price if you order right now. Or if you do 2 years, you actually get $20 off, and this is one of my favorite parts because this is worth the price of subscription right here. You'll get a flash drive containing 5 exclusive talks from some of our top apologists. like Christopher Check, Tim Staples, Trent Horn, Carlo Broussard, and even Cy Kellett. I guess they threw Cy Kellett in there. They're just being nice. But no, he's in there as well. Here's the number, 1-844-589-1597, or you can go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Now, if you want to call in on pro-life open forum hour, the number is 888-31-TRUTH. Doug did that from Trenton, New Jersey, listening on 1120 AM. Doug, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I was listening to the program, and a couple of days ago, I read in the paper that they were taking stem cells from mice from the tail, and they made new ones. I wonder if Dr. George knew who that was done.
Yes, so that's called cloning, where you can take cells from one individual organism, whether it's a mouse, and it's been done with human beings too, although we haven't heard a lot about that. And there are different things you can do. You can apply an electrical current. You can take the most common way is to take the nucleus, which is the command center of the cell, take that nucleus out and put it into an egg of the same species, and then zap it with electric current, and that turns the genes on, and being in the right milieu, being in that egg, then will start the process going, and that can actually develop into a new organism, in that case, a mouse. And so that's called cloning, and that's something that has been done extensively. It's done extensively in certain industries where they want to raise animals that have the same genetic characteristics as the other ones, and has been done in humans. So, of course, in animals, as long as the animal doesn't suffer, it's not ethically inappropriate. But in human beings, of course, cloning a human being is treating that human being as a commodity, and then the second individual that is made from that cloning process then has sort of a subservient relationship to the first one, and the dignity is not upheld on many levels, and not to mention probably the most important is that each individual human being has a right to be procreated as a result of natural intercourse between the mother and the father. Of course, this violates all of the natural design.
Interesting, interesting. Hey, I noticed earlier on the program you said you handle social issues. If you Google Doug, S.I.
All right, thanks for the call, Doug. We appreciate it. Looks like we've dropped off. Let's move on to Jessica in Billings, Montana, listening on 1240 AM. Jessica, welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Oh, we accidentally hung up on Jessica. I am sure that is the fault of the substitute host, and Cy can berate me when he gets back. 888-31-TRUTH is the number. We have Dr. George Delgado on the line answering your pro-life open forum questions. He's a director of Culture of Life Family Health Services. You can find out more about that at colfs.org. Let's try Greg in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on 102.7. Greg, are you there?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, my question is a situation. If you have someone who is maybe near death or declining, but not necessarily imminent death, and they're insulin dependent, is insulin considered an extraordinary mean, or is it morally acceptable if they want to stop taking their medicines to withdraw the insulin, because obviously that's going to hasten death. They're going to end up starving. What's the moral aspect of that?
It all depends on the details. So we give insulin in order to keep the blood sugar from going too high. And we know that if a person who has many years to live, treating with insulin is a health-improving and possibly a life-saving medication. And certainly in some instances, if a person has extremely high blood sugars, and especially if that person has what's called type 1 diabetes, then insulin in the short term is no doubt life-saving. That person will die without it. These are patients we see in the hospital. However, most diabetics, they take the insulin in order to prevent the risks of diabetes many years down the line. And so in that case, it's a good thing, and it's a moral thing. However, you might have a person in that situation who finds the insulin injections too painful or too burdensome and chooses to no longer take the insulin. And in certain instances, if that person wasn't doing it solely to hasten death, then that would be morally acceptable. That would be that person's choice to refuse a treatment, just like we all have the right to refuse any treatment. As we get further along and we get closer to death and we get people, let's say, who are on hospice, many people that I care for on hospice, they may be on insulin. And for them, they have a predicted life expectancy of about 6 months. And keeping the blood sugar under control actually does not provide them any benefit. And it turns out that in those patients, the risks of the insulin often outweigh the benefits. And what are the risks of insulin? Well, whenever you take insulin, it lowers the blood sugar. That's what it's supposed to do. But not too uncommonly, it will lower the blood sugar too much so that people become what's called hypoglycemic. When you're hypoglycemic, you can get very sick, you can pass out, and you can even die. So insulin does carry a risk. And as you get farther along in your disease process, then the benefits of the insulin are outweighed by the risks. And there are other risks of it as the body starts to shut down and the kidneys don't process the insulin as well, then actually the insulin levels go up. So in a case like that, discontinuing insulin actually might make the most sense, both from a medical standpoint and even from a moral standpoint, because at that point it might be a burdensome treatment or a treatment that has risks that are disproportionate to the benefits.
Does that help, Greg?
Yeah, it does. It does. I guess, part of me was thinking that, you know, for somebody who's dependent on insulin, withholding insulin would be like withholding food from anybody else, because obviously if you don't have the insulin for somebody who's dependent on it, they're basically going to starve to death. And I do understand.
Yeah, I think you got the dependent part probably confused you. We talk about people who are insulin dependent, and what we really mean by that are that these are people who would possibly get sick without insulin, not necessarily that they right away are going to die if you take away the insulin. Most people on insulin, you could withdraw it and they would not die immediately. And so the exception would be the type 1 diabetics, and that's only about 10% of all diabetics. 90% of diabetics are what we call type 2 diabetics, who although they may, some of them are on insulin, they aren't really, although they often are called insulin dependent, they aren't technically dependent on it for life at that moment. And so those people, sometimes withdrawing the insulin is the wise thing to do, both medically and ethically.
All right. Thank you for that clarification, Doctor, and for the call, Greg. Very good. Let's go to Michael, listening on Guadalupe Radio in Houston, Texas. Michael, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hello. I just heard of a recent technology, and actually I heard about it on a Catholic Answers Facebook post. The abbreviation is IVG, and I think it stands for in vitro gametogenesis, where they can basically take skin cells from mice and turn them into the sexual cells and put, you know. So the theory is obviously that they'll one day do this with humans. So I was wondering if the doctor could talk a little bit about this.
Yes. So the gametogenesis has been around, at least 2, 3, 4 years. And they've demonstrated that they can take skin cells or other cells, what we call somatic cells, somatic meaning the body. So just regular cells of the body, often they're skin cells or cells from the lining of the mouth, which are commonly used for this, sometimes from the inside of the nose. And they can alter some of the genes in there, turn off some genes and turn on the genes that allow sperm to develop. And like you said, they can convert those into sperm. They've also, I believe, has also done this and created eggs in a related way. And so what this raises a specter is that you can have sexual reproduction outside of the body, of course, but sexual reproduction nonetheless, because whenever you have a sperm and an egg unite, that's called sexual reproduction. So you could have sexual reproduction really from one person without a mom and a dad. So you can see how this is another step on the slippery slope of destroying the importance, the foundation of the family and of the sexual embrace in marriage that is the design for sustaining and reproducing our race, our species. And instead, you have another way to really manufacture individuals and to procreate, although this is another means of sexual reproduction. It's outside of the design, of the natural design. And so this, just like in vitro fertilization, where you take natural sperm and eggs, this is one step away of that, but it's also a way of making these newly created individuals commodities. They're no longer treated as gifts from God, but instead they're treated as commodities, something that we've created in the laboratory, something over which we have total control. So it's very, again, very something very dangerous, and it's another step away from the natural law and away from the natural design for human procreation.
Appreciate the call, Michael, and for that thoughtful answer, Dr. Delgado. Pro-Life Open Forum, Hour 1 segment left, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back.
Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers. In 1 Corinthians, St. Paul exhorts Christians to have no dissensions among themselves and to be united in the same mind. And yet, since Martin Luther's rebellion exactly 500 years ago, the apostles' injunction seems to have gone unheeded. What is the faithful Catholic who desires Christian unity to do? Join us at the Catholic Answers National Conference this September 28th to 30th, right here in San Diego. The theme of the conference is the reunion of all Christians. If you want to learn how to evangelize our separated brethren with charity, you don't want to miss this conference, featuring all your favorite Catholic Answers speakers and some superb guests, too. Registration is priced lower than last year, and we have an even lovelier hotel with a better room rate. And September is the very best month to visit San Diego. For all the details, visit CatholicAnswersConference.com. Early bird registration savings expire July 2nd. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com and register today.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpo. In Mark 12:35, Jesus was teaching in the temple area. He referred to the scribes' claim that the Messiah had to be a son of David. But then he recited part of Psalm 109. The Lord said to my Lord, "Sit at my right hand until I place your enemies under your feet." So Jesus asked the scribes, if David himself calls the Messiah his Lord, how is the Messiah David's son? The Gospel says that the crowds heard this with delight. It was great sport seeing the scribes confounded. Our Lord was concerned with uncovering a passage of Scripture overlooked by the scribes, in which David refers to the Messiah as his Lord. He is both Son of David and Lord of all. That we are able to accept this is pure gift. Let us this very minute give thanks for the most precious gift we have, the gift of faith. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the show. Don Johnson sitting in for Cy Kellett today. Dr. George Delgado is here. He's the Medical Director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare. We're talking pro-life issues, euthanasia, assisted suicide, embryonic stem cell research, anything along those lines. You're welcome to call in. Let's go directly back to the phones. Bob is called in from Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Bob, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you very much, Don. I appreciate that. And thank you, Dr. Delgado, for your responses on the radio. You come across very clear and succinct and to the point, and you have a nice tonality to your voice. So I want to say thank you for that.
Well, thank you for those compliments. You made my day.
Excellent. That's true. I listen to talk radio all night long, and you've got an extraordinary talent there, so I appreciate that. Yeah, here's my question. Last year, when Hillary Clinton's running mate was Tim, I forget Kane or what his last name was, but I ended up calling their Virginia parish up there, St. Elizabeth's, I think, and I found out through Google and everything that they actually gave him a standing ovation, the Catholics there, because of just the fact that he was a running mate for Hillary Clinton. So what bothers me about the Catholic Church is that you have people like Nancy Pelosi who are pro-choice and they have separate little audiences with the Pope, and many of these politicians are not put in their place by our Catholic Church, and that really makes us look weak. And I don't like that the bishops don't do anything about that. And why are we so weak when it comes to the media and denouncing these people for their stand?
Well, you make a great point that there certainly arises scandal from all of this. And scandal is when a certain person's actions or inactions can lead others to sin. And so that's a very important concept, and I think that we all have to keep in mind all the time. And certainly these pro-choice so-called Catholic politicians who publicly claim to be Catholic and yet support the killing of unborn babies and other things that are against Catholic Church teaching, they're really, I think they're full of hypocrisy. And I think it's our job as Catholics, all of us, because the Catholic Church is all of us. We're all the body of Christ. And the hierarchy, if you think about it, they're a very small percentage of the number of Catholics in the world. We laity, we make up the bulk of the church. So I really see it as our responsibility as the laity to stand up and very charitably but very truthfully point out the hypocrisy where we see it, like you did in trying to call that parish. I think that that's a wonderful thing. And that we should do our best to inform other Catholics and other people of goodwill that these kinds of stands are hypocritical and they're not acceptable to Catholics and not acceptable to the Catholic Church. The second part of that is that we also have the ability as faithful Catholics to influence the clergy, including the bishops. And the way we influence them, of course, is by being active, faithful Catholics and being helpful to them in their parishes and in the diocese, and then speaking the truth charitably to them, developing relationships, because you know all changes of heart take place in the context of relationships. And so when you have a relationship with your pastor, with your bishop, then you can say in a very loving way, you know, I really would hope that you would stand up more against these hypocritical politicians who say they're Catholic but vote for abortion. Is there anything you can do? Why are they able to receive communion in a public way when the church says that they shouldn't? Can you please stand up and fight for us? And there are certain bishops who are very faithful and who are standing up to these politicians. Cardinal Raymond Burke is one of them. Archbishop Salvatore Corleone in San Francisco is another one. So we do have some very strong bishops who are doing this. But you're right, some of them are not stepping up the way they should. But perhaps they need us to back them up before they'll do that. And I see that as the job of the laity, to both be a voice to the world, but also be a voice to our clergy.
Appreciate the call, Bob, and I second your opinion regarding Dr. George's amazing answers. Thank you, Dr. George. We are going to keep moving down the list and get as many in as we can before the top of the hour. Jameson is calling from Jacksonville, Florida, listening on 1460. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. So I'm a nurse in the ICU, and people that have signed up to be organ donors, sometimes they happen to be in a car wreck or something, and have grievous injuries, and I am their nurse at the time that they pass away, and then the organ donation process happens, and it's I'm a pro-life Catholic, and it's sometimes challenging for me to wrap my head around what's going on. We're just looking for some kind of advice or any resources that would help me understand all that.
Well, yeah, the good resource would be the National Catholic Bioethics Center. They've written a lot of pieces on that. And there's also a Dr. Paul Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E, who's a neonatologist, who's written a book on the whole brain death issue and has other resources. So you could look him up on a search engine and find out all the great things that he's written. But it really is a very difficult and complicated situation when you look at this whole period of time when these people are declared brain dead. And one of the reasons that the so-called brain death definition was developed here in the United States and other countries was because of the perceived need for organs. And that these people who suffer massive trauma and who are declared brain dead, a lot of times their other organs are in very good shape and they can be used by other people. So the question is, are they dead or not? Because if they're dead and their organs are still in good shape, there's no problem ethically with transplanting those organs and taking those organs from those people. On the other hand, if they're not really dead yet, and you take their organs, take the organs from a live person, then you're killing that person. And of course, that is morally unacceptable. And so the crux of the issue is, can we determine if these people really are dead or not dead? The proponents of the brain death principles and of organ donation said, absolutely, these people are brain dead. If the brain's dead, the body's dead. Others, like Dr. Byrne and myself, I have some doubts. We point to cases where people have been declared brain dead and have continued to live and have even gone through puberty. So if the person's really dead, but maintained, let's say, on a ventilator, but has gone through puberty, I don't really think that person was dead. So either we may not be as good as we think we are at diagnosing brain death, or maybe brain death isn't the true indicator of death of the body. Maybe the life substance, what we call a soul, maybe that it can still be there and can be sort of governing the body, sort of continue to be the integrating factor, even though the brain has died. So these are very, very complicated issues. What I can say, though, that I think that there are instances where organ donation is done perfectly ethically well. And so the way to prove that would be if a person's on a ventilator, on a breathing machine, and you turn it off temporarily, and all the vital signs go down, and the heart stops and everything stops, then you know that person is dead and the lungs and the heart were just being kept going by the ventilator. So probably many of the time, if not most of the time, that is the case. But you really, to really be ethically correct about it, to make sure you're not killing that person, you really have to be sure with what's called a moral certainty that person is only, the organs are only being kept alive by the machine. And that's as opposed to an absolute certainty. What we mean by moral certainty is you've taken all the reasonable matters to make sure you know that something is true and that you can rest assured that they are, as opposed to an absolute certainty, which is much more difficult to do in life, where you've exhausted every single possible way to make sure that something is true. So moral certainty is acceptable to all of us when making these decisions. So I don't know if I gave you a direct enough answer, but I think I gave you the framework to show you that this is a very difficult situation and what the actual principles are, that you know we want to make sure that these people are dead before we take their organs.
Very good call, Jameson. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you, Doctor. Jessica has called back, the lady I hung up on. Jessica, we want to get your call in before the top of the hour from Billings, Montana. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. I just had a baby, and my doctor recommended, you know, not getting pregnant again for another 18 months. And I was just kind of wondering why the reasoning is. Like, are the risks significant or kind of...
Well, did you have a C-section or a natural birth?
I had a natural birth.
Natural birth, okay. Did you have extensive tearing of tissues that, you know, when the baby came out?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a little bit unusual, because if you look at cultures where, very primitive cultures that still exist in some places of the world, where they do what's called ecological breastfeeding, that is, they breastfeed when the baby is hungry and they don't give bottles or any of that. The natural spacing, is about 18 months. Their babies will be spaced about naturally 18 months apart. So that means getting pregnant about 9 months after the delivery.
Okay.
Now, so that's perfectly healthy and normal. And from a sort of sociological standpoint, that kind of spacing in the family leads to really good sibling relationships. And kids that are, you know, about a year, 2 years apart in school and or sometimes a year apart, if they're a little closer, they get along better, they form really strong relationships. It leads to a good economy of the family, where you're kind of doing similar things with the kids all the time, so that you don't have children that are 5 to 10 years apart, where you sort of have to have a whole different setup for one kid as to the other, and they can relate to each other really well. So that there's a lot of good psychological and social health when they're spaced that way. Now, the 18-month spacing, certainly from a medical standpoint, from a purely physiologic standpoint, it gives your body more time to rest. And there will be some advantage to that. But then if you put 18 plus 9, then you're out to 27 months, so the kids are over 2 years apart. And if you have trouble conceiving, then they get 3 years apart, and there's more spacing. So you can see those little medical benefits are going to be outweighed by the sociological and the psychological burdens that you're placing on your family by doing it that way. So I would not take that as written in stone. I would take that as that doctor's advice, but do what's best for you and your family.
Very good. I hope that helps, Jessica. Thanks so much for the call. And thank you, Dr. Delgado, for being here today. You can go to colfs.org, Culture of Life Family Services, or abortionpillreversal.com to learn more about Dr. George. Until next time, this has been Catholic Answers Live. God bless. Have a wonderful weekend.